You are listening to episode 109 of the Sound Off here on SEScoops.com. I am the Solomonster, and it is Saturday, May 15, 2010. Thank you so much for downloading the podcast, as always. And we're back. No show last week. And I'll tell you why a little bit later on. Have a bit of a plea for all of you. That'll come a little bit later on in the show. But in the meantime, a lot of different things to talk about that have developed over the past 2 weeks, really. I want to go back a little bit since there was no show last week and talk about a few things. So that's as good a part to start at as any. May as well start with TNA. A lot of things have happened since the last Sound Off. Not surprising. I think I talked about this last time. But in fact, they didn't waste any time, Spike TV did, because TNA Impact, as you're all well aware, is no longer on Monday nights. The Monday Night War is over. I called it a skirmish, not so much a war. I think I was proven correct in that assessment. Unfortunately, there really never was a chance for TNA on Monday nights. I thought there would be. I thought there would be change. There was no change. It was more of the same. Same people writing the show, same people in charge, same bullshit. And so Impact, by order of the fans, says Mike Tenay on TV. The fans have made their voices heard. They want Impact back on Thursday nights. Really? The fans wanted Impact back on Thursday nights. Well, I guess they must have, since they weren't watching their fucking show on Mondays. And so Impact moves back to Thursdays, and what do we see this past week? We see Scott Hall and Kevin Nash defeat Matt Morgan to become the new tag team champions. That says it all right there. I'm all for Matt Morgan getting a singles push and not walking around with the tag belts anymore. Hall and Nash in 2010 as tag team champions speaks volumes about TNA. But we'll get to that. As far as the move back to Thursdays, obviously it was the right move. I was a big advocate for moving to Mondays. And I believe I had even said this, that the worst thing that could happen, the worst thing that could happen is that they just move back to Thursdays. And in fact, that's exactly what happened. And I know there's a lot of different people who were disappointed. I'm sure Eric Bischoff is very unhappy, and Dixie Carter and Hulk Hogan, because it's embarrassing. You know, for them to come out just a few months ago and all this ballyhoo and bullshit, the big press conference and all that about how moving to Mondays was, you know, a sign of big things to come for TNA, and they were going to be competitive and we're going to take it to the WWE. Hogan specifically mentioned WWE. So to them, it was a big competition and they failed. And that's what happens when you position yourself as a competitor to somebody as big as WWE. Instead of just focusing on making your own product better, you end up embarrassing yourselves and making yourselves look like stupid fucking morons. Such is the story for TNA. Hopefully they'll do well on Thursdays. I know the show this past week was back up a little bit to a 0.93, which is certainly an improvement from the 0.6s and the 0.7s and the 0.8s that they were doing on Mondays. What's a little disconcerting is that entire audience that they had before still has not yet come back. You know, they were routinely doing ones on Thursdays. They're not quite there yet, and they may not get there. They may have alienated some of those hardcore fans so much that what little fans they actually have, they may have actually alienated some of them. So this may go down as one of the bigger colossal failures in the history of this company before they ultimately go out of business, which, you know, hopefully won't be for a long, long time, but I wouldn't put any money on that. You know, when your company pretty much and your TV show revolves around Orlando Jordan feuding with Rob Terry, I don't really need to go into any descriptive terms about what that whole angle is all about. And you've got people fighting over WWE Hall of Fame rings in your main events. Things aren't going too well for your company. You know, they've got Rob Van Dam as their champion. They've got a lot of great talent. AJ, Joe, a couple of good tag teams. Abyss, I think, is just beyond stale. He just is completely floundering in this stupid Hogan gimmick. I think there's a lot of value in Abyss. I think if Abyss, for example, became a free agent, if I was WWE, he's one of those guys I would scoop up. And I certainly wouldn't position him as Hulk Hogan's biggest fan. I don't think there's any money in that, but the fact is, TNA's got a lot of talent. I want to see them do well. Because January 4th, you know, wasn't all that long ago. And I was one of those people who was I had a good time watching TV that night. And it had been a long time since I had had that much fun watching wrestling on TV on a Monday night. And I was hopeful. I was cautiously optimistic that this was a sign of things to come. And unfortunately, it wasn't. So we're back to just having Raw on Mondays. And by the way, I'm going to get to that in a moment. But Raw has just been fucking atrocious lately. Exactly what I had feared. All the great build-up to WrestleMania. And then WrestleMania comes. They kind of blow their load. They've got nothing left after that. They're just creatively bankrupt. So for as much as I'm bashing TNA, I could just as much bash WWE. But in any event, Impact is back on Thursday nights, and Vince Russo is still writing their TV show, so deja vu. Now, Raw last week, let me tell you. I actually missed the first hour of the show. I've since gone back and watched the segments. So for example, Randy Orton and Meat Loaf. I understand why WWE likes having the celebrities on their shows. There was actually a great article, I believe, last week in the New York Times. It was a complete fluff piece. I love reading these. As a PR person, I love reading these because these are the types of articles that you want to get for your company. So, you know, kudos to WWE for getting exactly the type of publicity that they're looking for. I don't know how this is translating into their bottom line. If anything, I think the guest hosts actually take away from their pay-per-views, but I get that. You know, you have a celebrity on, he plugs their product or whatever it may be, their TV show, and they get beat up, or they get to wrestle a match, or they do some stupid comedy. It's a little too formulaic at this point. I think it's beyond a stale concept. But whatever, Meatloaf comes out, he's generally obnoxious. I will say this, Meatloaf, I don't know if you felt the same way, but I'm watching him. He actually performed really well. He, as obnoxious as he became at the end of that particular segment, he was just a ball of energy. I don't know what he was hopped up on, maybe a couple of cups of coffee, but he came out there, he's yelling, he's screaming, he's not stumbling over his words, he's very well spoken, he's playing his role perfectly. Eats an RKO, not the best one I've ever seen, but clearly, you know, he was having fun with it. I wasn't, you know, appalled by it. He was out there for all of 5 minutes, got beat up, and that was the end of Meatloaf. He reminded me so much of Don West in that segment. The energy, even the way he sounded, his voice. I don't know, he just reminded me of Don West, and it reminded me how great it would be if Don West ever came to WWE. Don West can do a number of different things. He actually is doing really good things, really positive things for TNA and their merchandising department. But he actually grew into being a very entertaining announcer as well, a very entertaining color person. For the brief time he was managing Amazing Red, he was, quite frankly, amazing in his role as manager. Maybe more so because we just don't see wrestling managers anymore, so it was refreshing to see that. And, of course, Hogan and Bischoff came in, and they're not really all that familiar with Don West, and I don't think we've seen him on TV since. So he's another guy in TNA I would maybe one day love to see in WWE, even though they don't utilize managers either. I think he can be an asset. So watching Meatloaf and listening to him, for whatever reason, reminded me of Don West. But the guest host, Flava Flav, not a fan, could care less. I did think it was kind of funny. He was in the ring with R-Truth, and they were getting ready for a match with Regal, and Flava Flav just went on and on and on and on, playing to the crowd, and to the point where they actually rang the bell to start the match, and he was still jaw-jacking in the ring, and I think he realized at that point, oh shit, I better shut my mouth and get out of here. So he was generally annoying. He was one of the poorer guest hosts, I think, that they've had. He's certainly no Bob Barker or Jesse Ventura. And apparently, next week we have to put up with Buzz Aldrin and a lot of really unfunny astronaut humor. And a commercial-free show, no less. May as well talk about that, too. They promoted a United States Championship match for this Monday night, pitting The Miz against Bret the Hitman Hart. In a match, by the way, that Bret Hart on his own Facebook page a couple of days ago claimed was news to him. Nobody had told him, apparently, that he would be wrestling The Miz for the U.S. title. Obviously, this is just going to be an angle. This is not a match. I've had people email me going, oh, do you think that Bret will make up for WrestleMania when he didn't wear the pink tights and he'll come out wearing the pink and black? Just stop. He's not wrestling. If he quote-unquote wrestles, you know, The Miz will take a bump from somebody and Bret will put him in a sharpshooter. It's not going to be a match. Brett is done as far as matches are concerned. I mean, he'll be in the ring with The Miz. Could he be? Sure. Could he actually win the championship? Absolutely. I can envision a scenario where Bret Hart wins the U.S. title for Miz and then officially calls it quits. Because remember, this Raw is supposed to be it for Bret Hart. I mean, him and WWE are on very good terms. They may well do more work together in the future. Bret can be back on TV in a couple of months. But for the time being, this show this week in Canada is meant to be his swan song for now. If he wins the title, I don't know. Are they going to retire the title? Are they going to put it up in a tournament like they did with the Intercontinental Belt? I don't know. But it's not out of the realm of possibility that they could give Bret a nice little send-off in his native land by giving him a U.S. championship win. I like the idea, personally, the Bryan Danielson idea of having him on Raw. Maybe Bret decides to, obviously Bret doesn't want to compete. He's not a wrestler. And I don't know how they would work that. There's no connection between Bret Hart and Bryan Danielson, but there's a lot of different ideas for how they're going to handle that. It'll be interesting. I think I'm looking forward to seeing Bret's reaction. You know, Bret's gotten some really good reactions, and he's gotten some lukewarm reactions in certain cities, which surprised me, considering that, you know, Bret had been out of the company for so long, but was still a big enough name, and it was a big deal, him coming back. Him coming back on January 4th in Canada would have been unbelievable. As it is, the crowd that night in Dayton, Ohio, gave him a very nice ovation, but this will be the first time that Bret Hart steps in front of a Canadian crowd on a WWE show since 1997, since Montreal. So this is a big deal. I expect a very big pop for Bret and a very, a reaction becoming of somebody of his stature. So I think that'll be a nice little Raw moment that we get this week. And then, of course, John Cena one-on-one with Sheamus is the other match they were promoting. I don't think there's anything on the line. I just think Sheamus hates John Cena. John Cena doesn't like Sheamus, and so we have a match. But anyway, back to Raw this past week. The other big news, was the appointment of Vicky Guerrero as the new general manager of Raw, which apparently was meant to be very short-lived, even though Vicky may well be coming back as the Raw GM. At the end of the show, Vicky, of course, is being threatened by Randy Orton, and she's scared to death, and she decides that she's going to resign to save her life. And she resigns and she runs away. And that was apparently meant to be it for Vicky as the Raw GM. It was a one-night-only self-contained angle, which actually pissed me off because I hate shit like that, because it just makes the show feel completely worthless. When you have a one-shot self-contained angle like that that just plays itself out over the course of a night and doesn't carry over, what the fuck was the point of watching this show for 2 hours? What did any of it mean if next week it's just not even going to make a difference? Apparently, Vicky got such heat, which you could tell from TV. She always gets heat. She's the biggest heat-seeking missile in that company. But apparently, the reaction was such that they're actually thinking about installing her as the permanent Raw GM. They were going to put somebody in that role. They want to have a general manager. They've taken the power away from the guest host to make changes and to make matches. I'm surprised it took them this long to do that. I agree with that. I would do away with the guest hosts altogether, but whatever. I understand why they do it. But whoever they were thinking of putting in that GM role may not be getting that spot. Vicky may well be the Raw GM after all. We'll have to wait and see how they handle that. But apparently that was being discussed as of a couple of days ago. But anyway, Vicky runs away, and Randy Orton leaves Edge laying with an RKO at the end of the show. And, you know, clearly they're positioning Orton as the modern-day version of Steve Austin. I think he's doing okay in the role. He's just not getting those reactions that you would like. He's not having any effect on the ratings. Raw ratings are actually down considerably the last couple of weeks, around a 3-1, I think, on average. I can't blame TNA. Can't blame football. I guess they can blame Dancing with the Stars. And there may have been some NBA playoff games on, too, but yeah, the Raw ratings have not been very good these last couple of weeks. So it'll be interesting because this Monday is a 2-hour commercial-free edition of Raw, the first commercial-free Raw since the first commercial-free Raw, which was last summer with Donald Trump. Again, that wasn't exactly a one-night-only self-contained angle, but even the Trump thing from last year when he, you know, bought Raw, you know, he basically bought part of the company from Vince McMahon, and a lot of people got very excited. You know, this is kind of cool. What's Trump going to do? And all these different, what ideas do they have? Is there going to be a promotional war within WWE? And then, like, the very next week, Trump decides to sell Raw back to Vince McMahon at double the price, and Donald Trump looks like a smart man, and Vince McMahon looks like a dumbass. And, you know, the fans are just left wondering why they got excited over an angle that just got aborted in 1 week. I just hate stuff like that. But the fact is, Raw has not exactly been lighting my world on fire these last couple of weeks. I'm actually very bored watching this show. Shawn Michaels being gone sucks. Because Shawn Michaels single-handedly didn't make Raw excellent every single week, but he had a pretty big role in making Raw watchable each week for me. You know, listening to this podcast, clearly the one match and angle that really got me excited, and there were a couple of matches, don't get me wrong, that had me excited going into WrestleMania, but it was all about Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker, and a lot of that was Shawn Michaels. If you think of the different storylines and programs that Michaels has been involved in since, I don't know, go back the last 3 or 4 years, maybe even a little bit longer than that. Michaels and Chris Jericho back in 08 had a tremendous feud and had some really great matches out of it, including a fantastic ladder match at No Mercy. I think it was back in 08. So the Michaels-Jericho stuff was top-notch. They carried Raw for months on end. Shawn Michaels and Kurt Angle, if you want to go back to 2005, great stuff. Shawn Michaels and even Shawn Michaels and JBL, which in some respects, you know, it wasn't a great angle, but Michaels did such a good job that there was a lot of thought given that maybe Shawn Michaels and JBL was going to be a WrestleMania match instead of Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker last year. They actually ended the angle, I think, a little prematurely, but it turned out to be pretty good stuff because of Shawn Michaels. Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker. Some of the best stuff that they've done these last couple of years. There's a pattern here. Shawn Michaels and Ric Flair going into WrestleMania 24. All that stuff. Great stuff. Well, now Michaels is gone. And he ain't coming back. And you see, I mean, Triple H has been out too, but I certainly will not argue that Triple H being off TV is a bad thing. I think it's a good thing. But they're just not doing anything except maybe the Jericho and Miz stuff, but that's not enough. That's not enough to carry a show. What Orton is doing is, you know, it's not Orton's fault necessarily, but there's just nothing there to hook me as a viewer. And it's actually quite frustrating, I think, to watch this TV show every week when you're subjected to these just ridiculously stupid comedy skits that just aren't funny. They're just not funny. You know, it's the same stupid, tired bullshit every week with the one stupid segment, at least, with the guest host, and you have the comedy character, you've got Santino, and enough! We've seen it every fucking week since this guest host concept started. It is played out. It is boring. Move on. Come up with some new material, for crying out loud. I mean, you know, Buzz Aldrin this week. I'm just dreading the stupid astronaut humor that we're going to get. Raw is out of this world. The WWE universe. And then the week after, we have John Lovitz, okay? John Lovitz as the guest host of Raw. The critic! WrestleMania. Very disappointing this year to WWE. They had their annual, I think it was a stockholders meeting, and the WrestleMania numbers came out, and the company's doing very well for itself, very profitable. They have very little of any debt. I think they have something like $200 million plus, maybe even $250 million in cash reserves. Very healthy. But they were expecting at least 1 million buys for WrestleMania this year, and they didn't get that. In fact, they fell pretty damn well short of 1 million buys. WrestleMania came in at about 885,000 worldwide buys, which would only translate into about, give or take, about 500,000 domestic here in this country. So when you think about it, this is WrestleMania. This is their biggest show of the year, and it was a very well-promoted WrestleMania, too. I cannot fault WWE with this. They did everything right. You know, you can argue if the Bret Hart angle was handled right. From the beginning, I think the answer to that is no, although I think that, you know, some of the stuff they did the last 2 weeks saved it. But by and large, they did a phenomenal job promoting that pay-per-view. Cena Batista was a big match, Bret Vince was a big match, Michaels Undertaker just could not have been promoted any better. It was a strong lineup, and you have the WrestleMania name carrying it. And they had big expectations for this show, and they just fell short. Now, there was a UFC pay-per-view that weekend that was headlined by George St. Pierre, who is one of their bigger draws in the company. And apparently WWE, even with Bret Hart making his big comeback against Vince McMahon, WrestleMania just got absolutely ass-raped in Canada, in large part because of the UFC pay-per-view and the appeal of George St. Pierre. So when Vince McMahon is asked questions in these conferences about, you know, competition from UFC, and he brushes it off and says that they're two totally different audiences, I laugh. I laugh and I cry a little bit, because clearly he is a man in denial. I mean, the UFC audience is comprised of a lot of old wrestling fans. I mean, anybody with half a brain knows this. I even have friends. I'm a small sample size, granted, but I'm willing to bet there's people listening to this show right now that would say the same thing. Maybe you even fall into the same category yourself. You used to be a wrestling fan. There's a lot of people that listen to this podcast who don't even watch wrestling anymore. They just want to keep up on the wrestling news in some way, but they watch mixed martial arts. So this notion that the two audiences are distinctly different, the UFC audience and the boxing audience, he says, are more alike. You know, you can compare us to Dancing with the Stars and the Ringling Brothers Circus. Well, that may well be true, but the UFC audience and the WWE audience definitely correlate, and I think this was a very good example of that. And they should be very happy with the fact that UFC is not running on the same weekend again for the foreseeable future, because if they did, I don't see how the outcome would be much different. Now, don't get me wrong, almost 900,000 buys for a pay-per-view is a lot, but again, by WrestleMania standards, you know, let's go back here a second. You know, WrestleMania last year, promoted as the 25th anniversary, even though this year's show was technically the 25th anniversary, but we won't let facts get in the good way of a promotion. You know, last year's show ended up doing about 960,000 buys. The year before that, which was, I believe, that must have been the Mania with Michaels and Ric Flair, that did over 1 million. And the biggest Mania of all time is still WrestleMania 23, which was the Battle of the Billionaires with Vince and Trump, which I think did about 1.2. So, you know, when you compare the numbers like that, and you look at WrestleMania and how well promoted it was, it's very disappointing. I mean, the last thing I want WWE to do is look at that and go, shit, you know, obviously what we did didn't work, and so we've got to go back to the, you know, crash TV, and long-term promotion of these matches didn't mean anything. No, no. Long-term promotion of the matches means a lot, but when you have competition from other sports or other events, you know, shit like that's going to happen. It just, unfortunately for them, worked out where they were running the same weekend, and, you know, UFC picked up a lot of steam, as they always do in the days leading up to the event. They've got some great TV that they put together on Spike to promote these things. It's a real sport compared to wrestling. There is that, too. And, you know, what can you say? I thought it was I thought WrestleMania this year was a pretty good show. I thought the promotion was better. The promotion of that show was better than the show itself. But it was a good effort, and they just fell short. So there you go. I want to make one comment here, because I didn't do a show last week, and I wanted to talk about this. The Drew McIntyre angle on SmackDown. Of course, Drew is already back by order of the chairman, Vince McMahon. Drew is back, and he has been given back the Intercontinental Championship that Theodore Long stripped him of 2 weeks ago when he beat the shit out of Matt Hardy, probably because Matt Hardy tweeted about him. He does a lot of that lately. Oh, Matt Hardy. But Drew McIntyre got his ass fired. He got suspended, then he got stripped of the title, and he got fired. And of course, that firing lasted 1 week. So all the questions I got that I didn't have a chance to answer last week, oh, is Drew really fired? Did he get popped for a wellness policy violation? Which was my first thought when I heard the story. Apparently, it was just an angle. What purpose it served, I don't know, since he came back 1 week later. I don't know what the purpose was of taking the title away from him and having a little tournament and having Kofi win and be Christian. I don't know what the point of any of that was. But Drew is back. And the other thing is, 2 weeks ago, I was listening to The Big Show. Big Show was in a suit and tie, looking quite dapper, doing commentary for a Jack Swagger Kane match. And it just struck me, and I think I've said this before, when Miz and Big Show, or Miz and Chris Jericho, rather Big Show and Chris Jericho were a tag team, Big Show would do commentary sometimes. And he is just awesome on commentary. I mean, he is really, 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 really good. And he's one of those guys that when it's time to hang it up, I don't think he would want the job, but if Big Show wanted to be a color guy for WWE on commentary, I would sign him up right away. He is just, he's just very well spoken. He can think fast. He's very funny. He's just really good. And he was, you know, talking to Todd Grisham and the teacher about that match with Brock Lesnar. He didn't mention Brock by name, but he alluded to the match he had with Brock Lesnar on SmackDown all those years ago where the ring broke. And I don't know, just listening to him on commentary, it was like night and day having to listen to Raw. And that's part of why Raw sucks so much, is because of Michael Cole and Jerry Lawler. But, yeah, just really, really good stuff from Big Show. I don't think he's winning the championship from Swagger at the Over the Limit pay-per-view or anything like that, nor should he. But stranger things have certainly happened. And speaking of strange, the last little review topic here for WWE this week that I want to get to is NXT. Now, I don't usually check out NXT because I just don't have time. I'm usually at the gym, and if I wasn't going to the gym, I would probably find something to do because NXT is a boring show. I tried watching it. I really, really, really had high hopes for this concept at the beginning. When I heard the original plans for this show, that it was going to be more like a Tough Enough slash reality type TV show, there might be some matches and wrestling, but really it was going to be a lot of pre-taped segments, getting to know the guys, showing them in training, and learning about their backgrounds, more of a personality-driven show. I was excited because I know that UFC has had a lot of success with The Ultimate Fighter. And I actually was a big fan of the old WWF Tough Enough show in its first incarnation, not when it was on SmackDown, when it was a real show on MTV. And they actually did tape a lot of segments like that. They went and they taped interviews with these guys. They showed like a day in the life. They just never used much of it. They used a little bit of it for David Otunga at the beginning, but all the stuff that they taped and they had ready to go, they never used it. And it just turned into another wrestling show. It was like Superstars, but with a bunch of guys that nobody knew. And they just completely betrayed what the original concept was supposed to be. Everything about the show that could have been exciting, they just completely fucked up the whole concept. They took a show that had a lot of promise, and they just completely fucked it up. Which, again, is just amazing to me, considering that WWE is the leader in what they do. And they do a lot of really good stuff. You know, the way they promoted WrestleMania, for example. And the same company just fumbled the ball so badly with this show. A show that I was legitimately excited about, and within 2 weeks, I just could not stomach it anymore. And now, and I didn't get to see this, but I've heard in the last couple of weeks they had, you know, these weird physical challenges where they were doing, like, jousting from the old American Gladiator show, and they were doing a soda-drinking challenge in a concession stand. You had to sell the most merchandise. What kind of bullshit is this? I mean, who would spend 20 minutes of their time, 20 seconds of their time watching something like that? I know some of you watch the show. I just don't know why. I'm assuming that you guys are creatures of habit who just will watch anything that WWE puts out, even if it's complete horseshit. I get that. I mean, I used to be like that. But as you get older, you will realize that your time is better spent doing other things. If Raw is a good show every week, I will watch Raw nonstop every single minute, all the way through, because it's that good of a show and I'm entertained by it. But if WWE is putting on a show that I am, quite frankly, embarrassed to be watching, then I'm not going to watch it. And apparently a lot of people felt the same way, because NXT's ratings took a nosedive over the last several weeks. They couldn't get up above a 0.8. And Sci-Fi made the call that something's got to change. WWE agreed. And what we saw this past Tuesday was a panic reaction, although I'm not going to argue. I mean, if they're going to end the NXT season a little, you know, a couple weeks earlier than expected and shake things up a little bit, I'm all for that. I do not fault WWE for that, but it was a little weird because here's a guy in Daniel Bryan who is consistently, at least at the beginning, consistently ranked number one, even though he never won a match. That right there is a problem. Why? Because if you have a person who's ranked so high in the pros poll, and I believe that it was legit at first. I don't know how legit that pros poll has been in recent weeks, but here's a guy who loses every fucking match that he's in and he's ranked number one. Then what's the point of watching these matches? The matches don't mean anything and they're boring as fuck, so why am I watching it? That was one of the bigger problems with this show. Anyway, everybody and their mother knew that Daniel Bryan, even if you didn't know his background, you knew that he's pretty good in the ring. He's a pretty good wrestler. And he has more personality than people give him credit for, as vanilla as he may seem. So NXT goes on the air this week, and we find out that there actually is going to be more than one elimination. So they eliminate Michael Tarver. Couldn't care less. He's got a good body. He's okay. But that's all he is. He doesn't stand out to me in any way. He could have a supporting role. You know, they may keep him around to do something with him. You know, maybe make him Ted DiBiase's new Virgil on Raw. I don't know. But Michael Tarver being eliminated from NXT, whatever. I'm cool with that. I really don't care. And then we find out that Daniel Bryan has been eliminated from NXT. The same Daniel Bryan who earned his first victory on television just the night before on Monday Night Raw. They had an 8-man tag and the NXT guys were in there. And after all these weeks of building up, and I say building up loosely because I don't know how you can build somebody up by making them lose every fucking week. But, you know, the original plan was for him to lose and lose and lose and lose, but ultimately win NXT and then challenge The Miz and win the United States Championship. Plans changed, as they always do in WWE, and they decided that they were going to give Daniel Bryan his first win in a meaningless 8-man tag team match with a small package on Santino Marella. And they played this off as the biggest win of his career. They put Daniel Bryan on their shoulders and they were celebrating. His first victory after all these weeks is a fucking small package on Santino Marella. So he gets eliminated. They say that it wasn't the pros poll or anything, that him and Tarver were making comments on the show last week when they were asked. They felt that they should be off the show because they weren't performing to their expectations, and so management interceded and decided to cut them themselves. It was an executive decision, and so Matt Stryker is interviewing Daniel Bryan backstage, and he cuts this very sarcastic promo. And you saw more personality out of him in this one segment than you have in the last 10 weeks or whatever of NXT. He cuts this promo about Daniel, you know, I guess Daniel Bryan has been eliminated. I don't know that you're going to see that guy again, but there's another guy that, you know, people have heard about, and you can find him on YouTube, and he's a killer, man. This guy will kick your head in. And, of course, he goes ahead and he mentions the name Bryan Danielson. And, in fact, they've decided that they're going to use the Bryan Danielson name. Why? Because when people YouTube that name, they find a lot of material. And he even alluded to it during the promo. Well, no shit! I could have told you that! People are going to YouTube Daniel Bryan, they're not going to find anything except a couple of FCW matches. I said from the very beginning they should have let him keep his name. But it took them 12 weeks to realize that that was a mistake. But I love this promo because, not just because I thought it was a really good promo, in spite of the fact that the cameraman who was shooting during that segment apparently has Parkinson's, but I'm hopeful that Danielson will now get the push he rightly deserves. They're not firing him. They're not sending him back down to Florida. Calm down. I've gotten tweets and emails from people. How could they do this? They can't be this stupid to let this guy go. They're not letting him go. They still have very high hopes for him. I just don't understand how a company that does like this guy, they like him. He's not being buried on purpose, not yet. He doesn't have any political enemies, not yet. They like him. Vince McMahon is high on him. And they actually thought it would be a good idea to get this guy over. With the reputation that he had on the independent circuit as being the best in the world at what he did, and he was a multiple-time champion, I get the fact that he was a big fish in a small pond on the independent circuit. You're not going to bring him in and put him over Triple H on his first night. But they really, honestly believed that the best way to get this guy over and make him a star was to beat him every single week. Because we all know that worked wonders for MVP, who still hasn't recovered. And the quicker they get him heel on SmackDown, the better off he'll be. So hopefully they'll come to their senses on that. But Danielson is probably going to go to Raw, from what I understand. That's not confirmed. He could very well be stuck in a tag team, which I actually would not like. I think he should stay as a singles wrestler and just go around and just beat the shit out of people. There's a reason that during Bryan Danielson match, I mean, he doesn't look like the most intimidating person in the world, but looks can be deceiving. That could be his gimmick. Looks are deceiving. And he'll go around and just beat the holy hell out of people. I mean, there's a reason when he would wrestle in Ring of Honor that people would always chant during his matches, "You're going to get your fucking head kicked in." Now, I don't expect that to be a popular chant at these PG-rated shows that WWE does, but this is a guy that could be a money player for you. And you need as many of those right now as you can because you've got a lot of older guys that aren't going to be around too much longer. So anyway, going back to earlier, One of the ideas that a lot of people seem to think might perhaps happen this Monday night is maybe Bryan Danielson will show up in a surprise move, and he'll kind of be Bret Hart's surrogate, and he'll wrestle The Miz, and he'll win the title from The Miz. And I think he would get a really great reaction. I actually would not mind that idea at all. I just wonder how smart it would be if this guy's trying to get him over as a big baby face. I don't know how happy the fans in Canada would be to pay their money to come to the show and find out that Bret Hart will, in fact, not be wrestling, and Bryan Danielson is going to take his place. I don't think he's quite at the point yet in WWE where people would look at that and go, wow, you know, this is great. You know, it's not like if Bret Hart came out and said, well, you know, John Cena is going to take my place, even though I still think people would hate the shit out of that. But, you know, there's any number of ways you can go with it. I hope I see him back on my TV very soon, and they can try to rehabilitate him. The quicker they can do that, the better, because they've done nothing but kill this poor guy on NXT. The show did nothing for his career. They realize that. It's an admission of failure. They're going to let him use his own name. They're going to get him off that stupid show. And I see big things for him as long as they don't fuck him up a second time. Hopefully they learn from their mistakes. The other guy that was eliminated on Tuesday was Skip Sheffield, who happened to win a match on that same show, and yet he got cut. So it's just, that show doesn't make any sense to me at all. I just could not care any less about that show going forward. I suppose Wade Barrett is probably the favorite to win. I know they're most high in that company on David Otunga, who probably is the worst wrestler of the bunch, but that just, are you really surprised by that? I mean, I like Otunga in that he's got presence about him. When he guest-hosted Raw a couple weeks ago, people bashed it, and I didn't bash it. At least I don't remember bashing it. I mean, it wasn't like he was the best guest host, but he had this presence about him. He felt like a star, you know? He's very well-spoken. He doesn't stumble over his words. You know, promos are a very big thing in WWE. He's got that ability. He just can't wrestle for shit. He's a big guy. He doesn't know how to run the ropes. He is just very clumsy. And you can put him on the road and try to season him up a little bit, but there's no guarantee that he's going to end up being a good wrestler. He's got to be able to deliver in the ring. For him to win this show, okay, would be a crime. I'm not advocating they cut him. I think they should keep him, but I don't think he should win the show. I think Wade Barrett probably makes the most sense. But I just don't care. I don't care who wins. I don't know if they're doing another season of NXT. I believe they are. Even if they can't get a TV network to back him up, they may just put it on WWE.com. I know, you know, originally the plan was to do a second season and bring up, much like Daniel Bryan was the star of this season, to have Low Ki, who is known as Caval, down in developmental, and who wrestled for TNA as Senshi, and he was in Ring of Honor, to kind of build things around him. I don't know if that's in the plans anymore. I guess we'll find out shortly, because this NXT season will be concluding a little sooner than originally expected. I guess that by this time next month it'll be over already. So, you know. And by the way, speaking of Bryan Danielson here, I just brought up some comments here. This was on WWE.com. They actually interviewed him about the end of the Daniel Bryan character. This is what Danielson said. Okay, this is what he said during the interview. He goes, quote, "Daniel Bryan is a laid-back, easygoing guy who doesn't get mad in the ring but has the technical skills that rival some of the greatest superstars. However, he's not a winner. He gets in the ring with Batista, and he's good enough technically to push him to the limit. Same thing with Chris Jericho, but Daniel Bryan is a figment of the WWE's imagination. He never got anywhere. He's never been anywhere except WWE. He's lost every match he's ever been in, but Bryan Danielson is a former world champion. Bryan Danielson is a champion wherever he's been. He's one of the best wrestlers in the world, and he doesn't just say that himself, people say that about him. The real me is Bryan Danielson. I was trying to fit into what they wanted me to be, but that's not me. Bryan Danielson is the real me. I want to be in WWE, and I never said I wanted to be off NXT. I just said who I thought should be kicked off, and it was Daniel Bryan. But Bryan Danielson's dream is to main event WrestleMania, and to do that, he's got to be in WWE. I want to be the best, and you're not getting that on NXT doing monkey bar challenges and drinking soda. Daniel Bryan was okay. He was a good guy. He was nice and friendly, but Bryan Danielson has a little bit of a meaner streak. He's got more of a dark side to him, so we'll see. So there you go. That's straight from the mouth of Mr. Danielson himself. I've got big expectations for this young fellow going forward, and just don't fuck it up. I guess the other big piece of news is some injury news in WWE. Beth Phoenix, who was the Divas champ, or rather the women's champion, same shit, I suppose. She was the champion on SmackDown. It was originally thought to be an ankle injury, and then it turned out it was a lot more serious than that. Apparently, she has a bone bruise, a torn and displaced meniscus in her knee, and a completely torn ACL. And she sprained her MCL as well. So she's basically all fucked up. And she's going to be undergoing surgery with Dr. James Andrews this Tuesday, and she's likely going to be out for at least 5 or 6 months. So the Glamazon is gone for quite some time. Melina, by the way, who has been recovering from injury number 17, is going to be on her way back at the end of June, which would put her on target to be injured again in about early August. So there you go. All right, so we're going to get into the mailbag here in just a second. I just want to mention one thing here, and I intentionally waited until this point, because I didn't want to bias anybody's opinion. As many of you are aware, if you follow me on Twitter and all that, twitter.com/solomonster, by the way, one of the reasons I wasn't able to do a show last week, and I've kind of been waiting here, is I went and I ordered myself a new microphone here to use for the show, a little more professional, very, very simple plug and play, you know, good brand, trustworthy. Heard mixed reviews about it. Some people say it's a great microphone. Some people say there's a kind of annoying buzzing in the background. So I did some sample recording here before I did this podcast, and I heard that buzzing, and it just annoyed the crap out of me. And I changed some of the levels and all that. It helped a little bit, but it's still there. I notice it, even if other people don't. But you guys are the ones listening to the show, not me. So you got to do at least one sample show with it, so that's what this show is. I've recorded this podcast with my new microphone here. And I want you guys to let me know. I want you to email me, tweet me, hit me up, and let me know what you think of the quality of the sound off this week. Because it is being recorded with a new microphone, and if it's unsuitable for podcasting, then I will simply junk it and go back to the old mic and search for a new one, a new USB one. But if it's not bad, if you hear the buzzing, but the quality is actually improved, and so it kind of, you know, counteracts the effects of the buzzing, and you think I should stick with the microphone. If you don't notice it at all, that's even better. Or if you notice it and it's unbearable and you just can't stand it, either way, let me know how it sounds, and we'll take it from there. So just wanted to let you guys know. Didn't want to lead off the podcast with it, and then everybody would be listening for the slightest bit of buzzing in the background. I know it's there, but let me know how it sounds. If it's that bad, we'll junk it. And if it's good, then great. It was money well spent. All right. So keep sending in those emails, by the way, mentioning how long you've been listening to the podcast for, so I can mention it with your letter. If you know the time period or even the episode number or thereabout. It's just cool to be able to let people know how long you've been listening for. So we have Miguel here, who's been listening since Sound Off 79. Isn't it a shame that Batista seems to be leaving the company just as he's really shining with his latest persona? I love his new character and would like to see him stick around for longer. Well, I agree. Batista's been fucking awesome these last couple of months. He dresses horribly, but it's horribly awesome, his outfits each week. I certainly, if I met him in a dark alley, would not have a bad word to say about it. But no, I mean, he's just, it's the right role for him. He should never, ever go back to being a babyface. This is the role he was born to play. It's just a shame it took them this long to figure it out. I mean, he's been a heel before, but it had been many years. And last I heard, he was still leaving. You know, Over the Limit is an I Quit match, and he will literally be quitting that night. I know that he was listed on, I think, the house show lineups, and maybe they have another international tour coming up in June. So it's possible he will be staying a little bit longer, but if he does, I think it's just going to be to finish up some non-televised commitments. So, you know, next Sunday for the pay-per-view and maybe the Raw the night after, I think that's supposed to be it for Batista unless he changes his mind and decides to sign a new contract, because that's the only way he's going to stick around is if he signs a new deal, and he has not yet done that. The other question here from Miguel. Just saw Raw from a couple of weeks ago. What are your thoughts on Miz and Chris Jericho? Those two seem like a perfect team to me. Well, they are. They are. They complement each other very well. They're two of the probably the most egotistical characters that they have on that show. They, of course, had the great Twitter war of, I guess it was 2009, between Jericho and Miz on Twitter. And now they're good friends. Well, I don't think they're good friends, but certainly they're tag team partners going forward. They're going to be facing the Hart Dynasty at Over the Limit on May 23rd for the Unified Tag Team titles, which I don't know that I don't have a preference. I mean, the Hart Dynasty, I think, needs to hold on to those belts for a while to gain credibility. But if Jericho and Miz won, I wouldn't be offended by that. If anything, it would be awesome because the two of them would then be able to appear on any show they wanted to. So they could be on Friday nights as well as Monday nights. And that can only make SmackDown a better show, too. So I think Jericho and Miz are an awesome team. They were on commentary about 2 weeks ago on Raw and trashing Michael Cole, of course, and just generally being awesome. I said earlier how great Big Show was on commentary. I could say the same thing about Chris Jericho. He'd have to be crazy and stupid when he retires as a wrestler to want to be a WWE announcer and be pre-produced by Vince McMahon and get yelled at in his ear. But if he ever wanted to do it, we'd be better off for it because Jericho's he's just awesome. Brian in upstate New York wants to know if Batista within a few years is Hall of Fame material. Absolutely. Why wouldn't he be? I mean, he's held the championship, what, 20 times? Well, he hasn't held it 20 times. He's gotten... You know, the thing about Batista, I think we did this exercise once before, so if we did, I apologize. But I would love to know how many title shots Batista has gotten on pay-per-view since 2005. Every single WWE pay-per-view show going back to 2005, when he won the title from Triple H at WrestleMania 21. How many world championship matches from Raw or SmackDown has Batista gotten in that time? And that's not counting Raw and SmackDown itself. We're just talking pay-per-views here. He may well have gotten more title shots, except for John Cena, than anybody else in the company, and maybe anybody else in history in that period of time. Title shots that give, like, candy to this guy. And he's won a lot of championships. He's main evented a lot of pay-per-views. In fact, that WrestleMania, by the way, where he won the belt from Triple H, that WrestleMania Goes Hollywood theme, that Mania far exceeded expectations. I think that show did over 1 million buys, actually. It was because that match was very well promoted, and the story where Batista turned on Evolution and all that was so well done. So it kind of goes to what I was talking about earlier, and that long-term booking and promotion that makes sense is not a bad thing. It's a good thing, and you can do very well with it on pay-per-view just as long as you're not running opposite UFC that same weekend. But yes, Batista is Hall of Fame material. I mean, if Nikolai fucking Volkov can be in the Hall of Fame, then you cannot come up with an argument for me that Batista should not be in there. Luis writes in a couple of questions here. We'll take these two. Will Alundra Blaze ever enter the WWE Hall of Fame? I think she will. Not going to happen anytime soon. She certainly left on horrible terms, dropping the WWE Women's Championship belt back in 95 into a trash can on Nitro certainly did not endear her to anybody. But you know what? If WWE can make amends with Wendi Richter, and it's not like they, you know, they felt like they had to make it up to her for what they did all those years ago with the first screw job, with the Spider Lady when they screwed her out of the women's belt at the Garden. But they're running out of names for the Hall of Fame, and they're going to become more desperate to bring people back. I mean, there's already talk that maybe Lex Luger, if they do a WCW theme in Atlanta next year for the Hall of Fame at WrestleMania, that maybe Luger would be an inductee. If they can make amends with Wendi Richter after what happened with her all those years ago, then they can make amends with Alundra Blaze, who was a very good women's wrestler, even as Medusa in WCW. I mean, she was a big women's star. She may have been the first... Well, I shouldn't say that, but anyway, yes, I think she will eventually go in, of course, if she's willing to do so. If she doesn't want to go in, you know, like Bruno Sammartino would go in a heartbeat, he just doesn't want to, then she won't. But if she does, she'll be in there. And do I think Regis Philbin will ever guest host Raw? You know, I'm surprised he hasn't done that already. I mean, Regis is a big wrestling fan. He's had a ton of WWE guys on his show going back to the early 90s. I think it would be a good fit, but it would have to make sense. Maybe if they're ever on the East Coast again, maybe they pitched him and he's turned them down. I don't know, but I would think if he got pitched the idea, he'd probably be open to doing it. I mean, he's, you know, Regis is a fun guy. He's a good personality. And like I said, he's a real wrestling fan. So why not? Can't be any worse than Flava Flav. James writes into the show here, listener since episode 10. So one of the hardcores. I'm responding to your commentary on Rated RKO in episode 108. Edge and Orton officially formed their team on October 9th, 2006, and broke up on May 11th, 2007. The group held the tag belts once. Sure, they didn't tag much once Triple H tore his quad, but they were high profile for the short period of time they were together feuding with DX, so I think there is room for them to reform the team if creative wanted to do so, because there is room to do some good business. Well, I don't know what makes you think that they're going to do good business. I mean, tag teams, for the longest time in this company, have been positioned to mean nothing. Tag team wrestling is not what it was 15 or 20 years ago when they actually could draw money. Edge and Orton are far more valuable on their own as singles wrestlers, and it doesn't matter anyway because they're feuding right now, but Edge and Orton together as a team to me just doesn't make sense. You know, they did it a couple of years ago and it didn't last that long, but for what it was fine, and they don't need the team to help get each other over. So what's the purpose of putting them together? Plus, it's already been done. You know, I mean, it's not like there's been certain acts that have been done before, and I sometimes find myself saying, oh man, I wish they would do that again. But this is not one of them. It's not like Edge and Orton as a team blew me away or showed me anything spectacular. I mean, it was two high-profile singles guys that got slapped together as a tag team. They were a makeshift tag team. They weren't as good as Jericho and Big Show, for example. I'd much rather see Jericho and Big Show reform their team before Edge and Orton. Sarab writes in from Bangalore, India, one of our international listeners. Dear Salamancer, I wanted to... let you know that WWE's ratings in India have been topping the charts once again. There's a chart here. I just am too lazy to open it. I saw it earlier, though. Very impressive numbers. This year's WrestleMania 26 broadcast was by far the largest audience for wrestling in India ever, almost topping 1.7 million viewers. Well, it's too bad none of those viewers could have been translated into pay-per-view buys. Otherwise, maybe WrestleMania would have done better than the 885 that it did. You know, the thing about UFC, going back to that, I don't think I mentioned this. UFC, WWE did beat UFC that weekend, but UFC did about 770,000 buys, which was actually far more than they expected. And the thing about UFC is, I think in pretty much every other place in the world that it broadcasts, it's not pay-per-view. I mean, they broadcast those events, I believe, like in Europe, for example, and maybe somebody can correct me on this, on free TV. You know, or maybe it's even in some cases a premium cable outlet, but when I say 770,000 pay-per-view buys for UFC, that's pretty much all domestic. That's North America. So compare that to WrestleMania, which in America, and I don't actually know if this is the U.S. and Canada combined. Let's say it is. Let's say North America did about 500, and actually when the final numbers come in, it may actually go down. Sometimes these things go up, but from what I understand, I don't know, you know, I've tried to do some reading about this to better understand how it works, and right now it's all predictions. Nobody knows how much higher or lower it may go, but that final domestic WrestleMania number for this year may actually dip below 500,000, which if it does, from what I understand, would make it the lowest WrestleMania in terms of domestic buys. Think about this for a second. Since 1997 and that just horrific WrestleMania 13 show. I say horrific excluding the Bret Hart-Steve Austin match, because other than that, it was just not a good WrestleMania show. And that show did garbage in 97. And this WrestleMania may actually have done domestically as badly as that. And I don't think, again, that it's symptomatic of bad promotion. I think it's symptomatic that A, wrestling just isn't as popular as it was a couple of years ago, and B, they were up against UFC. So that's the last thing I'm going to say about that. Oliver writes into the podcast. He says, howdy, Salamonster. But yet, he comes from London, England. I just laughed at that because I don't know too many people from London who start their conversations by saying, howdy, but I love you for it, Oliver. You gave me a good laugh. He just wants to know my thoughts on the new promo style that TNA has recently adopted. They seem to be more modeled on hidden camera documentaries instead of traditional wrestling promos. Shots are often obscured by objects in the foreground, and it does add a certain element of realism to it, as opposed to the two shots, three quarters on, in locker rooms and backstage areas. But something for me does not sit right. I'm not sure precisely what it is. Maybe realist conventions simply don't work in wrestling, which draws so much upon artificiality. Have these aesthetics been used anywhere before wrestling? Did they work back then? And most importantly, what are your thoughts on it at all? I've been a long-time listener since just before your brilliant Michael Jackson episode, so I suppose I started somewhere in the mid-60s. Well, if I remember correctly, the Michael Jackson episode, the infamous Michael Jackson episode, was episode 75. So Yes. Infamous, indeed. Brilliant. I love your use of the word brilliant. So one of the few people who actually supported my Michael Jackson rants. I'm sure Webmaster Mike will love to hear memories of that podcast being drudged up since he's a Michael Jackson fanatic. I've seen the new promo style that TNA has used. I applaud them for trying something different. I'm not a huge fan of it. Maybe just I don't like the angles they're using. But I do like the concept. I think WWE should do something similar. Because it's think about how fake it is. I mean, we know we're watching a fake show, but it just reeks of fakeness when we're watching a WWE show and these two guys are pretending that they've got a big secret they want to tell each other, but there's a fucking camera in front of their faces and we're supposed to ignore that. So I think it's a great concept. I think I would do it a little bit differently. From what I understand, Jason Hervey is the one who's kind of been the one behind those shots. You know, Hervey's been a business partner and a good friend of Eric Bischoff's for many, many years. Hervey is, he was on that show, TV show, The Wonder Years, many years ago. He was the older brother of Fred Savage. And I hope he's not as annoying in real life as he was on that TV show. But apparently he's the one who's been in charge of or has been the brainchild of that idea. I think it's a good idea. I think it could just be executed a little bit better. I'm not a TV camera tech guy, so I can't tell you the exact angles and the proportions and everything that they should be doing. But, you know, it's a step in the right direction. I think any bit of realism you can add, and just to go to your point here about maybe realism doesn't work in wrestling, I don't agree with that at all. I think that's the one thing that's hurting wrestling more than anything else right now is that lack of realism. People are tired of seeing shit that they know it's fake, we know it is, it's a TV show, it's entertainment. We don't want to be smacked in the face with it when we're watching it. And this guest host stuff, for example, and the comedy they sometimes do just reeks of that sort of thing. It just makes you shake your head and go, why am I watching this? But I think if they started incorporating more realistic elements into their shows a la UFC, it would actually do them a lot of good. So I am a big supporter of anything they can do to make the product feel more realistic. Michael writes into the podcast. He apparently is Mickey James' number one fan, so my condolences on that. Dear Solid Monster, my question to you is this. Who are your favorite heel and face wrestlers in WWE at the moment, and why? Well, my favorite heel is, without question, Big Dave Batista. I don't think I need to go into why. I already talked about that. My favorite babyface wrestler, and he's a babyface for now. We'll see where they go with it. But Bryan Danielson is my favorite babyface wrestler because he's just so good at what he does. And I'm so excited at the prospect of him showing all the WWE fans that maybe have never been exposed to his work before how good he really is. But he looks like a real meat and potatoes babyface guy. You know, he just looks like an everyday guy. Unlike Batista, who, if you met him in real life and he behaved, you know, if wrestling was real and you met Big Dave Batista in person, and he's snarling and he doesn't want to have anything to do with you, he's always pissed off. He looks like the kind of guy that would rip you limb from limb. Bryan Danielson does not look like that, but he could very well rip you limb from limb if you wanted to. But he just looks like a bread-and-butter babyface, but in the ring, he can back it up and go. And there's just, you know, he's got that intangible that I think people in due time will see for themselves. And also, I just can't think of another babyface I like right now in WWE. I guess Christian, but, you know, he's just been so beaten down, I can't say he's my favorite babyface, so I'm just gonna go with Danielson. Brett writes in, he's been a fan since Sound Off 21. He thinks that Vince Russo must have some nude photos of Dixie Carter or something, and thus Vince Russo has not yet been fired. May 3rd's Monday Night Impact was awful as far as booking, and if they can't get Jim Ross or Paul Heyman, how about Mick Foley? Foley is a best-selling writer, author, and a creative guy. Anything is better than Vince Russo booking Hogan and Bischoff in 5 segments per show. What are your thoughts? Well, Mick Foley, if I'm understanding your question correctly, Foley is with TNA. He's just taking time off. He'll be back on TV eventually, but as far as Foley agreeing to a creative position, it's just not something he wants to do, and I don't blame him. I mean, there's just a lot of effort that goes into that, that it's just a completely unrewarding job to be, I think, a promoter or a booker or a writer for a wrestling promotion. It's just a thankless job, and Foley is a veteran, much like many of the veterans they've signed to contracts who came to TNA in part. I mean, TNA, Foley came here in large part because he just was burned by WWE and he genuinely wanted to help get this company to the next level and help put over younger talent. But at the same time, he also had the easier schedule. He didn't have to travel as much, have as many commitments as he would have had in WWE. So why would Foley want to throw himself into a position where his all of his time practically would be used up. Not just booking, but dealing with the bullshit that comes with booking. I think booking for Foley would be far easier. Vince Russo has talked about the fact that January 4th, okay, listen to this for a second here. January 4th, the big Impact show. It took Vince Russo, he locked himself in a room. It took him 2 months to write that show. 2 months to write one wrestling show it took him, okay? Let me tell you something. I'm not going to sit here and say that I could be a wrestling booker every week, okay? I could do a much better job than Vince Russo. But I'm not going to say that I could do a better job, for example, than the WWE creative team. Those guys work so incredibly hard at ridiculous hours. I do not envy them at all, but I respect them. But I can sit in a restaurant chowing down on wonton soup and an egg roll. At the same time, with my free hand, I can begin jotting down booking ideas and notes on a napkin. Like Paul Heyman used to do. Paul Heyman was famous for just ideas would come to him, he'd jot them down on a napkin, and that's how he would book an ECW show in a couple of minutes, in an hour, okay? I can do that too. I can book on a fucking napkin, and in a couple of hours, okay? Give me a little more time than Heyman. I will come up with a better show than Vince Russo. Why does it take this person 2 months to book a two-hour wrestling show? Why does it, can you answer that? Why does it take him 2 months to book a two-hour wrestling show? This is not rocket science. Less is more. It's very, very simple. You have a couple of ideas for key angles. You put a couple of matches together. Put a couple of promo segments together. Give them some bullet points. I want you to go out. I want you to talk about this. Boom. In one day, me and anybody listening to this podcast can book a fucking TNA show, okay? It doesn't take us 2 months to book a show. Mick Foley, if he wanted the job, wouldn't need 2 months to book a show. He could probably book a show in far less time. But like I said, there's a lot of bullshit that comes with it. People get hurt, booking plans change, other people have ideas, now people are butting heads. Why would Foley want to deal with that? Why would he want to waste his time with that? He doesn't. Chris writes in, been a fan since around episode 80-ish. His words, not mine. Hey, Solid Monster, my name is Kid Sean, and I was wondering, because I have been listening for a while, I always hear you and your thoughts, you're not the biggest Triple H fan, but I wanted to know, what are the chances of Triple H having another title run with Stephanie McMahon by his side? I was a huge fan of the McMahon-Helmsley regime, and I really would like to see that again. Well, there's very little chance of that happening. Stephanie, in fact, Stephanie is pregnant as we speak with, I believe, what will be their third child, and being that she's also head of creative, I just don't see why Stephanie would want to, or that she would even have the time, quite frankly, to put herself back on TV as a manager. Why would she even want to do that? No, that's not going to happen. Those days are over. Stuart wrote in, Salamaster, I've been watching a lot of classic wrestling promos and listened to your show a few weeks back, and you mentioned a Vince McMahon Utopia promo. And I was wondering if you could send me a link and any other suggested promos I could watch. Much appreciated, and keep up the good work. I wasn't able to send any links, and I don't want to go ahead and start searching for them. You can go on YouTube and search for them yourself, but the Utopia promo was a great one. And if I remember correctly, that was from the Breakdown pay-per-view in September of 1998. That was the big main event, Steve Austin defending the championship in a triple threat match against Kane and The Undertaker. Vince McMahon was working extra hard to get the title off of Austin, and in fact, that night he succeeded. Kane and Undertaker beat Austin with a double choke slam and a double pin in the middle of the ring, and Vince McMahon came out and took the Smoking Skull title. So the video heading into that pay-per-view, if I remember correctly, that was the Vince McMahon Utopia promo, which I don't know if you'll be able to find that one on YouTube, but that would be the event that it was attached to. As far as other promos, I mean, if you gave me some time, I could think of a couple, but I mean, the Undertaker Shawn Michaels stuff, including that video with the Placebo song, running up that hill that they used for WrestleMania this year, was some of the best stuff I have ever seen. But one other promo I would suggest would be, I believe it was for the Unforgiven pay-per-view in 1999. So ironically, this, you know, the other one was September of 98. This one was September of 99. And they were setting up for the big six-pack challenge. Steve Austin was going to be the guest enforcer, and it was going to be The Rock, Undertaker, Kane, Triple H, Mankind, and Big Show. And Undertaker ended up leaving, That was the end of Ministry. That was the last we ever saw of Ministry Undertaker, by the way. He left because he had injuries he needed to heal up from. He may have needed surgery. Of course, when Undertaker came back months and months later, he was the American Badass. But taking Undertaker's place in the six-pack challenge was the British Bulldog. And it was that pay-per-view that they put this promo package together for. It was almost a combination of, like, three different videos, because it was set to three different pieces of music. And I just remember one of the pieces of music, one of the songs they used was this song by Fear Factory called Timelessness. And they were showing clips of, you know, Triple H, who was the champion at the time, who Vince McMahon had just beat Triple H for the belt. And they were showing highlights of what happened from SmackDown when McMahon won the belt and, you know, Austin being arrested and all this other stuff. And the song, it's a slow, kind of depressing song, quite frankly, but that video was just phenomenal. I still remember that video to this day and the music that was attached to it. And I would say if you could find that promo for, you know, heading into the Unforgiven pay-per-view, they showed it on Sunday Night Heat and Raw and all that, I would find that promo because that's a good one. That's a keeper. Sebastian writes into the podcast from Birmingham, Alabama, by way of Columbia, South America. So he's pretty much hit all the different regions. I've been hearing a lot this week about the WWE network that Vince McMahon is trying to launch. I started brainstorming some programming ideas and came up with two scenarios. Number one, what people want. Basically, WWE Classics on Demand programming with some other talk shows featuring the wrestlers. Or what I feel we're going to get, kid-oriented bullshit that barely anyone would want to watch, and stupid comedy shows. Which one do you think is more likely to happen? I think it'll be a hybrid of the two of them. I think there'll be a lot of bullshit that people don't care about, but you've got a 24-hour network, you've got to put on some stuff that people want to see. You've got to put on some classic wrestling. You can't fill it with 24 hours of bullshit, because the network will be an epic fail. So I think it'll be a combination of both, but I wanted to mention this question on the air because I want people to write in. This is your homework for the week, okay? If you're listening to this show right now, let's entertain ourselves here. I want you to write in with your own ideas for what you think the WWE Network will offer. What kind of TV programs? Give me the names of some of the TV shows that WWE will give us with their new network that they're planning to launch in the fall of 2011. TheSolemonster@gmail.com is the email address. Write into me and let me know what your thoughts are. What do you think some of the superstar-oriented shows, for example, will be or will be called? Let's see what we can get on the air next week with some of the best answers to that. Tim writes in, I was thinking about The Undertaker's WrestleMania win streak. I think it serves WWE far better in the long run to have Undertaker go 19-1 as opposed to 20-0. That is, if they have the right guy beat him. It would be a surefire way to solidify someone's career beating The Undertaker at WrestleMania. And there's a whole list of young guys WWE has on the verge of superstardom, and that win at WrestleMania would make some young wrestler famous for the rest of their career. Well, maybe. I mean, there's talk that maybe Ted DiBiase would be one of those young guys. Maybe he would get a match with Undertaker at WrestleMania. I don't see that happening at all now. I think Undertaker and Sheamus could have a good WrestleMania match. But here's the problem with putting a young guy over, especially if it's a newcomer. You don't know what that person's future is going to hold. You don't know if they're going to get over and become a big star. Will beating The Undertaker at WrestleMania be enough to get them over and solidify them as a main eventer, for example, for life? I don't know that it's that easy. I think at the end of the day, it's been built up so much. People, by and large, do not want to see that streak end. I think you'll have a near riotous situation if it does. I don't mean literally, but people just would not be happy. And sometimes you just have to give the people what they want. And they don't want The Undertaker to go 19-1. They want him to go undefeated. If he doesn't wrestle again, he'll be 18-0. If he gets to 20-0 and calls it quits, then he'll be 20-0. It'll look that much more impressive when he goes into the Hall of Fame. Here's how I would book it, okay? If Sting, and I don't even know who the hell knows if TNA will even be around in a year. If Sting finally leaves TNA, or if TNA ends, and Sting is no longer under contract to them, WWE is very much open to the idea of bringing him in. Even if it's just for one program, and they want to put him in the Hall of Fame, they want to make a DVD for him. If he becomes available, and Undertaker or rather WrestleMania next year is in Atlanta, there may be a WCW theme to the Hall of Fame. To me, it would just make sense to sign Sting, get him in for the Hall of Fame, and as part of that, like a package deal almost, which, you know, there's been talk of maybe Goldberg getting some sort of similar treatment, but him and WWE have not been able to come to terms so far, and you build to a Sting-Undertaker match at WrestleMania. You know, to me, I think it's kind of one of those last quote-unquote dream matches that never happened, that you never thought you would see. And both guys are certainly, they're a hell of a lot older than they used to be, and not in the best physical condition, more so Undertaker, even though he still can have great matches. Undertaker-Sting at WrestleMania 27 with Undertaker going over would be, seem to make sense to me, I think would do pretty good business. And then, now you got one more match. Because if I'm Undertaker, I'm calling it quits after I get to 20-0. Then you build for the big Undertaker-John Cena match. I know people don't like, oh, I don't want Cena to have anything to do with The Undertaker. I'm telling you, it's money. Even if he doesn't go heel, he doesn't have to go heel. The fans will make him a heel. He will be a heel in the building that night at WrestleMania 28. I guarantee it. That match would have such heat. Because you have a situation here where Cena is, he's Superman. He's booked to be Superman. And people will think, holy shit, they're going to actually put Cena over The Undertaker. You will imagine the near falls in that match, the reactions from the audience, people having heart attacks, trying to fan themselves. It would be phenomenal. Of course, Undertaker would go over at the end. He could shake hands with Cena and ride off into the sunset. I mean, that's pretty much how I would book the rest of Undertaker's WrestleMania career. You know, but for all I know, this guy just doesn't want to give it up. You know, he may still be wrestling at WrestleMania 30 when they come back to the Garden. At least I hope they come back to the Garden. That way I can go. Alex writes in from Tijuana. Has a kind of a creative idea if you're trying to smuggle an SE Scoop sign into the WWE Over the Limit pay-per-view. Why not bring in a sign that, well, you know, Punk and the Straight Edge Society, their abbreviation on SmackDown is SES. And his idea was, why not bring in a couple of different signs? Go with a group of people. One person has an SES sign, which WWE, of course, will think is for the Straight Edge Society. And your friend next to you is a John Cena fan, so maybe he holds up the letter C. Person next to them is sitting there with a sign that they raise up whenever there's a two count that says, oops, only two. And put them side to side and you'll have a banner, a string of signs that says SE Scoops. To me, that just sounds like way too much work. I don't know anybody in their right mind who would waste time doing that. But hey, more power to you if you want to give it a shot. I'll tell you what, if you actually can pull that off, and I notice it, or Webmaster Mike notices it, we'll get you on the show. We'll give you a prize. We'll come up with something. But, you know, I wouldn't bother. You know, I've never been a big fan of bringing signs to shows. I just don't think it serves any purpose. I guess if you're in one of the front rows, but then you're just pissing people off who sit behind you. I've been there before. It's disrespectful. I mean, you're trying to sit there and enjoy a show, and you've got some douchebag standing in front of you. Mind you, there are people who will stand on their seats or kneel on their seat on their knees, holding up signs and blocking everyone's view. Don't be one of those people. And the people that just get to me so much are the ones that have the shittiest seats. They have the nosebleed seats up in the fucking boondocks up there, and they will bring signs with them as though they'll ever get on camera with those signs and anybody will see them. But you know what? If you're in the uppermost row, that's okay, because you're not blocking anybody's view behind you. So, not a big fan of signs, but if you want to try to smuggle in your own SE Scoop sign, you better do it fast, because there's no telling when the Straight Edge Society may break up, and if that happens, then this plan is for nothing. Sean writes into the podcast. He is a he's been a fan since episode 100, but he's gone back and downloaded every episode from 43 to 108 so far. Listen to them, as well as following you on Twitter, cheap plug, twitter.com/Solomonster. Two questions. You've probably been asked a million times, but considering how bad Raw is lately, how would the Solomonster work one episode of Raw from top to bottom, trying to make it the most enjoyable experience for fans? You'd have total control of every aspect of the show and the superstars. How would you make an episode of Raw work if given total control for 1 week? Well, this is a very complicated answer here. You see, first of all, I would need 2 months to write the show. I'd have to lock myself in a room. I'd have to lock myself in my cage, the Solomonster's cage. Now listen, less is more. If I had control over Raw for 1 week, just one show, first thing I would do, I would give people more than 14 minutes of wrestling, which, by the way, is the total amount of wrestling you had on a two-hour edition of Raw last week. Okay, 14 minutes. So, you don't want Raw to be full of just nonstop wrestling because, you know, let's be honest here. I mean, that could get a little boring too, but you've got to have more than 14 fucking minutes of wrestling. So, whatever show I booked, however many matches there were, I would make sure that the total amount of wrestling is more than 14 minutes. And I probably wouldn't even bother with a guest host. I mean, there's no need for it. I mean, now that the guest hosts have no power over the matches, what purpose does it serve? I would just get rid of the concept for 1 week, even though they would just bring it back as soon as I was gone. But beyond that, you know, I'd have to, I mean, if you want me to sit here and actually book a sample show for you, I mean, I don't really have time for that. Maybe I'll do that as an exercise, but less is more. More wrestling, less bullshit with the guest host, less comedy, and just give, you know, if you work one or two angles into the show, because angles are fine, it's just the problem is they do too many of them and they're not good, or they're meant to be funny and they're not. But if you have one or two angles that are very well executed, that people can get into, it's really all you need. They've got a lot of talent on that show now. It's very front-loaded. They've got John Cena, they've got Sheamus, Triple H, Randy Orton, Edge, Jericho, Miz, probably some people I'm even forgetting, a couple of supporting characters as well. They've got Bret Hart, for now, and the Hart Dynasty. So there's a lot that you can do there. It doesn't have to be complicated. Raw does not have to suck every week. But I can tell you whatever show I booked, you'd enjoy the hell out of it. Ash writes in, how far in advance did the NXT rookies know that they are going to be eliminated? Well, this is an interesting question. I say that because if you watched, for example, when Skip Sheffield got eliminated on Tuesday at the end of the show, I don't think he knew that he was getting eliminated. He looked nervous. They all look nervous. Nervous as hell. And believe me, these are not very good actors that we're looking at here. So Sheffield gets cut. He looked legitimately scared, and then he gets cut, and he cuts a promo that was practically, I mean, it just didn't make any sense, but it seemed like it was cut on the fly. He didn't sound to me like he was reciting, you know, word for word a promo that was scripted for him. So that tells me that he just wasn't told in advance. But yet, if you watch earlier in the show when Michael Tarver and Daniel Bryan were eliminated, Tarver is eliminated, he goes to walk off, and then he walks back, and he's shouting and stuff, and I'm sure that he didn't do that on his own. So for certain people, I think, if it's being worked into a storyline or something, they probably tell them, you know, right before, and they say, look, just react like this. And then for others, I think it's legit. I don't think that they tell them, and the Sheffield one is the one that tipped me off, that some of these guys aren't being told anything in advance. Kevin from New York writes in, have you seen 12 rounds? I know you said you weren't going to see it because when WWE just shoved the movie down our throats week after week, people got tired of it, yourself included. But the movie is actually pretty good. It has a good plot, lots of action, and a pretty good twist at the end. It's a shame that WWE had to ruin the movie for some people with their nonstop promotion every episode of Raw. I get why WWE did it. I'm not blaming them. Like, they shouldn't have promoted the movie. But they should have toned it down a little bit. You know, it's one thing to run a quick trailer for the movie during Raw, but they were doing it two or three times in a show, and at that point you start to turn against it, and that's what happened with me. I didn't see the movie. It was actually on cable the other day, and I just flipped right past it, but I don't know. I mean, if you enjoyed it, then maybe, you know, it's only one person's opinion, of course, but I respect your opinion. Maybe I'll give it a shot, you know? Anybody else that's seen the movie, by the way, feel free to write in and let me know if it's worth it or not, but I wouldn't spend money to rent it or buy the DVD, but if it pops up on cable again, I might give it a shot. So that's going to do it for the mailbag this week. We're going to cinch this bad boy back up and leave some of these letters for next time. And, of course, if you have any new letters, suggestions, comments, anything like that, remember, the email address is thesolemonster@gmail.com. That's all one word. Follow me on Twitter if you're not already. Twitter.com/solemonster. We're getting closer. We're getting closer to 500 followers. We're up to about 490 right now. And if you are number 500, there could be a special treat in it for you. So if you're not following me on there, get on there. If you are following me but not officially following me, it's free. Just follow. It's a lot easier that way. Any sort of updates, opinions, breaking news, I usually punch it up on there. And, of course, if you are not subscribed to the show through iTunes, you can do so by, you can go to iTunes and subscribe. It's very simple. It's free. It doesn't cost you anything. And as soon as there's a new show posted, you're the first one to get it delivered right to your computer. You don't have to wait for me to post the link on the website, and then if there's a problem, and then some people see it and some people don't. So it's just a lot easier if you subscribe that way. Last thing here, I just want to give a quick shout-out to my good buddy. I talked about this a couple of weeks ago, my friend Pete, who made his debut for WUW, Johnny Rod's promotion, in Brooklyn, New York, a couple weeks back, as Amish Cousin Simon, teaming with his partner Amish Cousin Cyrus. Well, they're actually going to be wrestling a tag team match at the WUW show, an explosive night of wrestling coming up next Saturday, May 22nd. I want to mention it now in case I don't do another podcast before next Saturday. If I do it on Sunday or something. So the show's coming up. It's in New York City. It's going to be at the Educational Alliance, 197 East Broadway. 7 o'clock start time, next Saturday, May 22nd. The Amish Boys are going to be in action against the dastardly duo of Steven Person and Dave Rivera. Very intimidating-sounding tag team there. They're going to be in for a long night, I have a funny feeling. I'm going to try to be there myself. So anyway, if you can stop by and check it out. I think tickets at the door are about $20, but it's a good time. And come out and support the Amish Boys. Your support, by the way, for the Amish Boys is support for the podcast. So you almost have to go. You should go to the WUW website, too. I think it's WUWonline.com. Another cheap plug here. There's some promos up there that the Amish Boys were in that are pretty... In fact, some of them are actually more funny than some of the comedy you'll see on Raw, which is actually somewhat sad, but if you've got a couple of minutes and want a quick chuckle, go ahead and check that out. And again, let me know what you think about the quality of the audio this week. I'm using a new microphone here. There may be a bit of a buzzing in the background. There's not a whole lot I can do about that, so basically I'm either junking the microphone that I just paid $50 for, or I'll keep using it if it sounds fine, or if the overall quality is better. So let me know how I sound, and then we'll figure things out from there. So until next time, be well, stay safe. Episode 110 on the air next weekend. Until then, take it easy, guys.
You've been listening to The Samba Monster.
You know, I really just don't understand what they're doing.
Anybody agree with me out there? I mean, anybody. Come on, throw me a bone here.
Probably the single dumbest thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
God, I love this business.
On SE Scoops.